This is the Dan Grosser Show on 98.7 ESPN.
Welcome back to the Dan Grosser Show on this Football Friday here on 98.7 ESPN. And, of course, time to go behind enemy lines once again. And we'll zero in on the Giants' Week 3 opponent. That, of course, is coming up on Monday night when they welcome in their old foe, the Dallas Cowboys, to MetLife Stadium. And joining us now is Todd Archer. He covers the Pokes for ESPN, and he's nice enough to give us some time here on the program. Todd, it's Dan Grosser here on 98.7 ESPN. Thanks for hopping on tonight. How are you?
I'm doing well, Dan. How are you doing?
Doing great, Todd. Thank you for your time, as always, here. All right, so they get a win last week against the Bengals. Last-second field goal. How much did that one victory calm things down in Cowboy Land, or not much?
Oh, there's never calmed down around here, because later on in the week, we have Jerry Jones saying, hey, I'd love to have a quarterback controversy if Cooper Rush goes out and wins a whole bunch of games while Dak Prescott's out. Hey, this could be 2016 all over again. So it's never calmed down, but certainly the getting a win helped Mike McCarthy's cause, and it made the locker room a little bit easier of a place. But this is a week-to-week league, a week-to-week business, and, you know, you lose Monday night, and everything that we were saying after the Tampa Bay game, well, that comes true again.
I think a lot of us on the outside, you know, when Jerry made those comments, I think we just kind of dismissed it as, oh, well, that's Jerry being Jerry. Is that the sense down there as well, or do you think that there could be any sort of validity to this?
No. It's Jerry totally being Jerry. And he's also the guy that told us before, just because I say it doesn't make it so. And one equals three. So all of this stuff, yeah, it's totally Jerry being Jerry. And we asked Mike McCarthy about it. And he's like, how can I say this with a straight face? And he's like, look, no, Dak is the starting quarterback when he comes back. And a big difference from 2016 when Romo got hurt and Dak came in. Well, the Cowboys knew Romo was going to miss a couple months with his back injury. And then they just got rolling. They won 11 straight games and, you know, had the best record in the NFC. So making that switch was a little would have been a little bit different than if they win two or three games with Cooper Rush. And we also, in that same conversation we had with Jerry, he talked about Dak being back next week against Washington. So, you know, it's just the roller coaster you have to ride when Jerry's talking and how you decipher everything.
It's a never-ending saga, of course. And you kind of beat me to the punch there on my next question. What is the latest on Dak? Because initially you had a timetable when he got hurt and he had the surgery. And then, as you said, Jerry's kind of moving that time frame up a couple of weeks here. Realistically, when do you expect to see Dak Prescott back in the huddle?
Yeah, I kept waiting for Jerry this week to say he's going to play against the Giants. But, no, I mean, realistically, I guess it's the right word, maybe feasible that he could play against Washington. And, it, you know, the stitches have to come out. He has to prove he can grip a football. He has to practice. He has to do all these things. So, in my mind, I always thought it was going to be a four-week proposition. So that would get you to maybe the Rams in October 8th or 9th or something like that. But probably the Rams on the 16th. So, you know, if Cooper Rush can – I'm sorry, the Eagles on the 16th. If Cooper Rush can keep them afloat, in my mind, that buys them more time to say, hey, Dak, not only do you need to get this thing right, we'll get it really right. There's no rush for that. And, you know, Jerry's told us that it won't be about re-breaking it or worry about that because the plate will take care of all that stuff. But there's still a, you know, if he does hit it again, can he grip the ball? You know, I had a quarterback tell me that the thumb, the most important part of the thumb for the quarterback is accuracy. Like, that's what you need it the most for. Well, that's a pretty big thing for a quarterback. So if you're a guy who has his thumb that's not right and you're going to be inaccurate, that's not, what good is that going to do you? So I think it's a lot of it because Jerry speak. I think maybe L.A., then more likely the Rams, the Eagles, I'm sorry, in that following week.
I'm almost positive there are no thumbless quarterbacks in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So I would probably agree with that statement.
That would be good.
That's definitely the case there. Talking with Todd Archer of ESPN, Cowboys-Giants Monday night at MetLife Stadium. First couple of weeks of the season, teams are still kind of getting their bearings underneath them. Starters don't play that much in the preseason anymore. There's still a lot of sloppy play early on in the football campaign. We know that now. But do you think this injury to Dak Prescott has even allowed folks to get any sort of a read, or is it complicated matters even more about just what this Cowboy team is?
That's a good one. I think defensively, you're starting to see what we saw in the summer in training camp, in the practices against the Broncos and Chargers, that this can be a salty defense. Now, are they going to only allow one touchdown a game? Probably not. But they're going to be pretty salty in what they can do. But offensively, I still think there's going to be questions until Dak gets back, just because uncertainty offensive line. Tyler Smith is doing a nice job at left tackle, but hadn't played there all summer. The left guard situation is shaky right now with Connor McGovern out. We'll see when Jason Peters is ready. Terrence Steele had four penalties, a right tackle in the opener. The receiver, we can go through all those names that no one knows about. But one good thing on Monday, it looks like Michael Gallup could be back. So they're still going to have to answer questions offensively when Dak returns, no matter what they do here the next couple of weeks, because this has been a team and an organization, really, for the last, I've been covering this the 20th season or something, 18 of those 20 seasons, this team has been built on its offense. Well, now it's kind of swung to where it's built on its defense.
How about the running game? I mean, it wasn't too long ago where it was the offensive line and the run game, which was really the cash cow for this offense. And, you know, you brought up the changes already on that offensive line, some youth that's being plugged in there and some inexperience. Throw in the fact that they haven't really been able to get this ground game going. Do you expect that to be maybe more of a focal point of the game plan coming up on Monday, given it is a Cooper Rush start again?
Yeah, I think you hit on it. I think that they know Bill Parcells, when he coached in, I'm sure he set it up there and he's coaching the Giants and Jets. There are ways to win these games every week, right? You got to just figure out which way it is. And for the Cowboys, I think they figured out the way to win this game is with their running game. And really, Tony Pollard had a pass catch that was really a toss play that somehow the ball ended up in front of him, so they ruled it a forward pass, and that was 47 yards. And Zeke has looked good here in the first couple of games. Now, his last 100-yard rushing game was against the Giants, I think last year even. He's looked better than he did last year coming off that knee injury. Pollard had some explosion. And I think for an offensive line, it's never easy in the NFL, but maybe easier to run block for these guys to just say, hey, come off the ball and go at people. I think that's how they're built to win. They're built to run, control it, play action pass, hit a couple big plays, and then hold on for dear life. Because even if they had a 17-3 lead against the Bengals when cold in the second half, Bengals tied it up. And then, you know, Cooper Rush completes three passes. They kick a field goal and win. Their formula to win these games is really kind of ugly. Mm-hmm. But as long as you're winning them, when your starting quarterback is out, who really cares?
That's all that matters. Get a W at the end of the day. The wins don't go bad at the end of the season. We know that. You know, you brought up the defense. Micah Parsons, certainly, I mean, we know how accomplished a player he is. He had a phenomenal rookie season, and he's picked up right where he left off and maybe even more. I mean, now you're starting to hear the LT comparisons, maybe just because the Giants are the opponent this week, which, of course, we have to pump the brakes on that one a little. But when you look at this player, I mean, the Cowboys have had edge rushers. I mean, DeMarcus Ware for the longest time, you know, most recently was head and shoulders, you know, a Pro Football Hall of Fame caliber player. Just how good can Micah Parsons be as somebody who watches him day in and day out?
Yeah, he came. I mean, as good as he wants to be, it's pretty remarkable what he's done. And, you know, I go back to a couple of things with Micah Parsons, actually three things. Didn't play his final year at Penn State, opted out COVID year.
Yep.
So that's something to consider. The Cowboys, lucky. If J.C. Horn or Pat Sertan were available when they were picking, they would have taken either one of those guys, not Micah Parsons. And now this kid comes in. He's not even a full-time pass rusher, and he has more sacks after 18 games than anybody since this has been an official stat since 1982. It's 17 sacks in 18 games. I mean, the kid's phenomenal, and he's not practiced much this week. He has a cold. It's not flu. It's not COVID or anything like that. They think he'll be fine for the game. But, I mean, he changes the dynamic for so many things because of what Dan Quinn can do. Keep him off the ball. Put him at linebacker, and he can be a solid run defender, or he can rush up the middle. Put him on your left tackle. They did that against Tampa Bay when they lost their left tackle, Donovan Smith, during the opener. Put him against the right tackle. They did that against Cincinnati going against Lael Collins, and he got a sack. So, you know, the multiple things that they can do with this guy can create so many mismatches, not just for him, but really for a lot of guys. And I think that might be the next evolution of this stuff, because I'm still amazed. There were a couple times in the Bengals game, this might speak to how bad their offensive line plays right now, where he wasn't even blocked. It's like, how do you not know where number 11 is? Like, that's the one guy you got to block. And so maybe now you start seeing the attention he gets frees things up for Dorrance Armstrong, DeMarcus Lawrence, Dante Fowler, you know, Sam Williams, a rookie, you know, all these guys. So they feel real good about their pass rush, probably as good as they have since the early or mid DeMarcus Ware days.
Jet fans probably licking their chops when you're telling that story about the Bengals offensive line, because they're going to see them coming up on Sunday here. Todd, we know that Mike McCarthy is always in the hot seat, or on the hot seat, I should say, and any Dallas Cowboys coach is going to be when Jerry is still there running the show. Do you think the Dak injury maybe takes some of that pressure off him a little bit, buys him maybe a little bit longer leash, an extra lifeline, if you will, given the starting quarterback isn't in there for a few weeks?
I mean, you can make the case either way, but I tend to think no, because they did win games without him in 2020 after he got hurt against the Giants with Andy Dalton as their quarterback, and they do think they have a much that offense that year was pathetic. That defense was pathetic in the COVID year, and now it's really good. So it theoretically could, but I know he doesn't feel like it's going to. So you know, it's win. And he knows it. He knows what Jerry's like. And look, Jerry said all the right things about backing him, and he wouldn't be here if I didn't think he could win a Super Bowl, and all those sorts of things. But, you know, this is the third year of a 5-year deal. I don't think it's going to happen, but everybody can talk about Sean Payton. I think if you're putting money down on who the next coach would be, it would be Dan Quinn because of what Jerry did to keep him off the market this past offseason. So, yeah, there's pressure on Mike, but I don't think that this has bought him time at all, because, as Jerry said, he doesn't have time to have a bad time. He turns 80 here pretty soon, so he knows that they have to win and have to win soon.
Is there an edict?
He's been saying it for 26 years.
That's true. It's been a long time between drinks. But is there an edict? Is there a mandate? Like, what type of season or what type of end result would suffice, you think, for this Cowboy team this year, apart from a Super Bowl?
Right. I don't think it's Super Bowl or bust. Clearly, he has to do more than what Jason Garrett did here, which was get to a divisional round. In my mind now, is it get to a divisional round when you've lost guys and, you know, you've plugged holes? And remember, Tyron Smith's not going to be playing until December. If you have more of those kinds of injuries and you're still able to manage a season like that, then I think he deserves some kudos. I don't know if there's a he has to do this to maintain his job. Right now, but as this season, I know Jerry's disappointment after last, when they lost to San Francisco, was as disappointed as he's ever been, because he thought that team was healthy and ready to make their run in the playoffs, and they were the only team to lose at home in the wild card round. So, I don't think he's got to get to an NFC title game. It would help him, though, that's for sure.
No doubt about it. Still can't believe how that playoff game ended last year with the quarterback sneak. And, yeah, not a good one for them there. Todd, should be a fun one on Monday night. Always appreciate a couple of minutes, my friend. Enjoy that game, and we'll catch up again real soon. Appreciate a couple of minutes.
You got it, Dan. Thank you.
All right. Todd Archer, ESPN, talking a little Cowboys. Remember, Monday night, Cowboys-Giants at MetLife Stadium. Giants look to go to 3-0 on the young season. 800-919-3776. That is our telephone number. We roll on this Football Friday. Dan Grosser Show, 98.7 ESPN.
You're listening to the best of ESPN New York tonight.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
800-919-3776. That is the telephone number. Thanks to Todd Archer for hopping on with us. We'll talk to Jordan Renan at 9:30. He, of course, our Giant reporter for ESPN, as we dive a little bit deeper into Giants-Cowboys Monday night. And don't forget, on Monday night, come check out our show live from Resorts World New York City Casino. That is on Rockaway Boulevard in Queens, 110-00 Rockaway Boulevard, to be specific. So we'll be out there doing the show from 7 to 10 while the Giant game is going on. Bart Oates, former two-time Super Bowl champ with the Giants, former Pro Bowl center, going to be there as well. He'll be on with us for a little bit, talking some football, talking some Giants. And, hey, they're not much better this early in the season if you're a Giant fan. When he got a chance to go to 3-0, and he got a chance to do so by beating the hated Dallas Cowboys. And there's opportunity there. You know, there really and truly is, like we said, and you heard Todd talk about. I mean, you know, it's Cooper Rush coming in here. And I know that Micah Parsons is legit, and it's scary. And, you know, people, again, the overreaction of society, as I like to call it. Micah Parsons has been in the NFL for 5 minutes. He had a great season last year. He's off to a great start this season. But how many games are we talking about, right? And now people, of course, want to liken him to the next LT, or he's the next Lawrence Taylor. He's the best pass rusher off the edge since Lawrence. I mean, why? Just because they're playing the Giants this week? I remember they tried to do the same thing with Khalil Mack once upon a time, you know, when he burst onto the scene earlier on in his career. And I remember they were getting ready to play the Raiders. Or, excuse me, Raiders were getting ready to play the Patriots. And, you know, Mack was doing his thing, and he was a terror, and he was, you know, settling in, and it was, you know, he was in a really nice stretch. And I remember the press conference leading up to game week there, and they asked Belichick about Khalil Mack and, like, made the Lawrence Taylor comparison. And Belichick, who usually get, like, no emotion from in these press conferences, he even said he, like, laughed and told the guy, he's like, come on, man. It's like, we're talking about Lawrence Taylor. Right? And I know that they just want to quote. That's what this whole thing is about. But it's like, Lawrence Taylor, like, that's the GOAT. That's the as good as it gets playing that. Lawrence Taylor is the greatest defensive player in the history of football, regardless of position. That's how much he changed the game. And that's why it's kind of funny with, you know, Aaron Donald and everything that he's doing right now for the Rams. And people want to just like, oh, Lawrence, stop. Stop, 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 stop. You know, like, can you even say convincingly, and I know that they play different positions, but I'm just talking, like, defensive linemen, if you were around and you remember them. You know, can you really sit here and say that Aaron Donald was better or more dominant than Bruce Smith or more dominant than Reggie White? No, you can't say. I mean, those guys dominated the game in their own eras. They were unstoppable. And Aaron Donald dominates the game during his era. But the game of football has changed. Even from the time when, you know, Reggie and Bruce Smith played in, you know, 80s, 90s to today. It's completely different. I mean, look at the rules. Look at how much the game has opened up offensively. Completely different. Great players are great players. We know that. 800-919-3776. That's our telephone number. Last night, week three got underway with the Browns defeating the Steelers. And Cleveland took over the game in the second half. They wore Pittsburgh out. And Pittsburgh at this point, you know, I mentioned it a little bit earlier. You talk about it because there's a jet tie in there. They got to do something with the quarterback. You know, if they legitimately want to win games this year, what are they waiting for to make the switch to Kenny Pickett? And I'm not saying Kenny Pickett is even going to win you games. But if you're not going to win games, you should at least find out what you have in him. I mean, like, what are you wasting time right now finding out what you have in Mitchell Trubisky? Mitchell Trubisky is a seat warmer. He is a placeholder. Mike Tomlin is stable enough in his situation right now in Pittsburgh to where he doesn't have to worry about winning games and making the playoffs for fear of losing his job. Tomlin is secure. But, you know, Tomlin is also a coach who probably wants to win as many games. Not probably. He definitely wants to win as many games as possible here. Because when you think about a Mike Tomlin, he's never had a losing season yet in his NFL coaching career. And this is a guy who's been on the sidelines for 15 seasons. So they must feel in that building and as a coaching staff that Mitch Trubisky gives them the best chance to win games. But what games are you talking about? Right? What games are you winning? I know that you got out of Dodge in week one and you beat the Cincinnati Bengals in a sloppy game. All right, fine. You won the game. Congratulations. Last week they went to, or, you know, they faced the Patriots. Couldn't get anything going offensively against the Patriot team whose offense stinks. And then last night, same thing. They just could not move the football. They've scored four offensive touchdowns so far this season in three games. That's not good enough. And I'm not sitting here trying to tell you that Pickett's going to be any different or any better. And there's going to be an acclimation period. But I'm pretty confident that when the Jets go to, it's not called Heinz Field anymore. I forgot what the new name is. But when the Jets go to Pittsburgh for week four, Pickett might get some reps. And he might get some snaps. You know, he could go out there and dink and dunk the ball up and down the field if that's what you're looking for. Because that's all you're getting from Trubisky. They're not running the football at all because teams don't feel threatened in any way by the downfield passing attack. So they load the box and try to eliminate the ground game. You know, no TJ Watt on the defensive side of things for the Pittsburgh Steelers. So that changes that unit completely. You know, TJ Watt, and I'm not making any comparisons and saying that he's, you know, this guy or as good as this guy. All I'm saying is that in correlation with the Steelers, to me, even during those early days under Tomlin, right, and I guess when Bill Cowher was still there in his later years, the one guy whose presence made a world of difference on that Steeler defense was Troy Polamalu. More so than any of those other linebackers that they had, who, you know, the James Harrisons of the world and you know, Joey Porters and all those guys who were dangerous in their own right in the front seven. But Polamalu was the guy who transformed that defense because he was everywhere. You know, if you put one up over the middle, you let it sail a little bit, he was going to pick it off and he was going to make some crazy return and take it back to the house. You know, if they were smelling run and they were sniffing run, he was going to be in the box and he was going to, like, jump over the line of scrimmage to tackle your guy before he even could get out of the backfield. Right? He changed the defense. You know, Baltimore had those guys and Ray Lewis and Ed Reed. Just completely different. That's what TJ Watt is for this Steeler defense. So if the Jets are not going to have to face him next week, which you know he's not, you're not playing, you like their chances. You like their chances. And the thing with the Jets, remember, at the beginning of the year, 2-2, I think, was fair. You know, as bad as that schedule looked, as bad as it looked, you said, I'll sign for 2-2 in these first four games against the AFC North. That's possible. Right? That's possible. They can't win one of these next two games. A Bengal team, which I think the Bengal game is going to be trickier than the Steeler game. And the Bengal game is at home. Because I think Cincinnati still, despite all their problems and despite all of their issues on that offensive line, I think Cincinnati is still a better football team than Pittsburgh. More dangerous. I mean, you got a quarterback and a group of receivers that can absolutely embarrass you on Sunday if you're not careful. I don't know how much revenge is going to factor in. Like, I really and truly don't know. Like, they were here on Halloween last season, and that was the famous Mike White game. Like, are they still thinking? Like, has Zach Taylor, the Bengals coach, had to bring up Mike White and that game? Has he had to show them clips of last year to get them ready for this game this week? I would like to think not. Right? I mean, so much time. I mean, the Bengals went to a Super Bowl since then. And they need more motivation? How about just winning a game? How about the fact that teams that have started 0-2 since the NFL went to this new playoff format have not made the playoffs yet? That should be incentive enough, not getting back at the Jets because Mike White beat them last year. Mike White's not even going to start this game. Acrisure Stadium is the naming rights, the new naming rights for what used to be Heinz Field, where the Steelers play. Acrisure. What's Acrisure? What is that, like an insurance or something? Does anybody know what that is? I don't know, whatever. Either way, you got to go in there and win a game next week and try to slow down an offense which is led by Mitchell Trubisky, a guy who's not going to the Hall of Fame.
You're listening to the best of ESPN New York Tonight.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'll tell you, right now in Yankee Stadium, the wrong Aaron is stealing the show for the New York Yankees. Hicks with a solo shot in the third to tie up the game at one. And now here in the fifth inning, Hicks with a go-ahead RBI single, scoring IKF to make it 2-1 in favor of the Yankees. And then right after Aaron Hicks hits the go-ahead RBI single, Aaron Judge comes up and strikes out for the second time this evening. So Judge 0-for-3 with a couple of punch-outs. He's at 3-14 on the season. Xander Bogaerts is not even in the lineup tonight for the Boston Red Sox. So he was at 3-14. Might come down to like decimal points and things like that if Judge doesn't pick up a hit before the night is through. So things getting a little dicey as far as the batting title race is concerned there in the Triple Crown for Mr. Judge. But the Yanks leading 2-1 here, and they got a couple of men on in the fifth against Rich. I mean, Rich Hill will probably be at the end of the line here pretty soon, you would like to think. I mean, he's upwards of close to 80 pitches. Yanks are starting to square a couple of good swings on him. And you got to figure that Alex Cora will probably go with his bullpen at some point here on a cool night to see if he could find a way to get 27 outs and get out of Dodge with maybe a victory or at least take this thing into the late innings where it was still a tight game, like you had there last night. As far as the Mets are concerned, we haven't talked about them yet, right? How about the Mets? We forgot about them. They didn't play yesterday. They kick off a series tonight in Oakland against the A's. And before they even take the field, they're getting a little bit of help on the outside or on the out-of-town scoreboard from their friends in Philadelphia, because the Phils have a 4-0 lead over the Atlanta Braves right now in the fourth inning. Phils put up a four spot in the second against Jake Odorizzi. So Nola right now has the Braves under locks, but still got a long game, and you know that the Braves have that ability to change the dynamic of a baseball game with one swing of the bat. That lineup is very dangerous, but right now you got to feel good if you're a Met fan, because if this result holds, you're going to have a two-game lead in the division. You're going to be two up in the loss column, which is certainly a big bonus, and now you go out there and you got to play the Oakland A's for the first of three this evening. Chris Bassett against Cole Irvin. And, you know, I may have mentioned this last night. I'm curious to see how Bassett fares tonight, because this is his old team, right? This is the place where, you know, he played the majority of his career, knows a lot of guys in that other dugout, knows the mound, knows the stadium. I mean, so he should feel comfortable, right? It's not like this is foreign territory for him, but sometimes when you're playing your old team, and certainly the first time you're starting against them, you know, the emotional level is probably high, the motivation, you know, he probably wants to go out there and stick it to these guys even more than maybe just any other ordinary opponent out there. So I'm going to be keeping an extra eye on Bassett tonight to see how he comes through. Brandon Nimmo is in the lineup for the Mets tonight. Remember, he left that game on Wednesday in Milwaukee because a little bit of a quad issue, was getting some imaging where everything checked out okay. Didn't know if Buck would maybe give him a day or not. He's back in there. So you got Nimmo, Cano, Lindor, Alonzo, Ruff, Escobar, McNeil, Vientos, and James McCann. First of three tonight in Oakland against the A's. Then you got DeGrom and Scherzer pitching this weekend. I know you don't play games on paper, but let's be real. Mets should sweep. Mets should sweep the A's. I mean, the pitching matchup is going to favor them in each and every one of these games. And I know Oakland just took 2 out of 3 from Seattle. You know, they're not rolling over. They're making it difficult. But the Mets are the better team. Now go out there and prove it. You know, think about it. If the Philadelphia score holds, you take care of business tonight, Mets could be up 2.5 games going into the weekend. I mean, that's like, that might as well be 10 compared to where things were pretty much for the last week or so. And look at Gleyber Torres. 2-run extra base hit for Gleyber. Gleyber is coming alive, ladies and gentlemen. Been on the Gleyber train. Been on the Gleyber bandwagon. Think about how much this changes the identity of this lineup. If you are an opposing team having a deal with the Yankees and you now got this Gleyber Torres, watch out. Watch out. It's not just Judge and like 8 other guys. It's Judge. It's Stanton. It's Gleyber. It's Rizzo. It's DJ maybe when he gets healthy. Donaldson has had a couple of big hits here of late. Are the Yankees a dangerous team offensively again? Is this real? Is this happening? Too bad they're pitching you don't trust that much. But, hey, the offense comes around. You know what? That's one box you check going into the playoffs. You take that. 800-919-3776. That's the telephone number. George in Connecticut. He's up next here. Dan Grosso Show, 98.7 ESPN. George, how are you?
Hello. Hello, Dan. How are you?
George, I am doing splendid. What is up?
I am a long life Jet fan for 55 years, and I've just got to get you off of the Zach Wilson bandwagon. This is a guy with a silver spoon who's been given everything, who never did anything at BYU specifically against top-notch teams, who had a historically bad year last year, whose mechanics are absolutely flawed, and has never shown that he can win a game. I understand that you have to think that the Jets have to hope that he's going to be something, but he has not shown us anything. How did the Jets make him captain when he's shown us nothing? And who gives airplane tickets from his uncle's airline as a gift to your offensive line when the year is over? I'm just not a believer.
It's amazing, George, how you say you're a lifelong Jet fan, and yet you're concerned with things that no fan should really be concerned about at all.
Right? I beg to disagree with you on that.
Well, George, let me ask you a question. Let's look at them one by one, and let's start with the last
one.
Why, as a fan, do you care, A, what Zach Wilson gives his offensive linemen as gifts, and number two, how he went about acquiring those gifts? Why should that have any bearing on what he does on Sundays?
I think it speaks to character. It speaks to the kind of person that is, and it speaks to how he steps up as being a man and a leader, and I don't think he's shown it.
All right, George, let me ask you a question, okay? Let's say you and I are friends. Okay? And for the purpose of this discussion, you know what, George? You're my friend. I got nothing against you. Okay? You're my friend. Let's say you say to me, hey, Dan, I know that you work for the Jets. I know that you probably have access to tickets, and I think you told me sometime, hey, if you ever need tickets, let me know. If I threw you a couple of tickets, because, you know, maybe that's one of the perks of the job, let's say, is that going to be a knock on my character? Because I have an in to get tickets? Like, are you going to refute the tickets? And am I a bad guy because of it?
Well, again, but do we want to go into other character issues
George, again,
about
him? That's what I'm saying. Does that really make a person a bad guy if they have access to something, which they are then bestowing on other people as a goodwill gesture?
I think it's a philosophical question, but I would say that if you're getting it from your uncle and it's not costing you a penny to give it to somebody, yeah. And those guys are protecting your life, yeah, I would say it is. As compared to the usual Rolex at the end of the year, yeah, I would say it is a character issue that I'm concerned about.
All right, let me ask you this question. He's giving a gift to teammates, in this case offensive linemen or whoever, who are millionaires in their own right playing in the NFL. So then I'll throw this question at you. Do you mean to tell me that none of these other players that he's giving the gifts to can afford airline tickets themselves, and it would probably be the equivalent to them of what maybe $5 would be to you and I because they're millionaires? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know why we're stressing about these type of things.
Well, again, right. But if it's a $5 gift, it's not saying much about either. But let's get back to mechanics and flaws and almost a historical bad first-year careers. I think people said he had one of the worst first-year quarterback careers in the last 30 years of the history of the NFL.
Do you know who has the rookie record, George, for most interceptions by a rookie quarterback?
Yes. You're going to tell me that it was either Peyton Manning or John Elway.
No, it was Peyton Manning. But it was Peyton Manning.
But those are the exceptions, not the rules.
But George, you know something?
If you look at those numbers, they don't succeed.
George,
I mean,
you know
honestly,
something?
Zach Wilson is as bad as Rick Myra was when I saw him as a Jet quarterback. And that's
George,
bad.
George, I got news for you, and I thank you for the phone call. Go Jets. You know what Rick Myra was? Guess what Rick Myra was? Rick Myra was the offensive rookie of the year back in 1993. You can look it up. He was. Rick Myra was. Hey, guys, look. You know, are you going to sit there and dump on Eli Manning and say that he's no good? He's only a two-time Super Bowl MVP. And you know how bad Eli Manning was as a rookie? When Eli got thrown in there, remember, at the middle of the season for Kurt Warner, how bad was Eli Manning? Go back and Google or YouTube or whatever. Go look at the game Eli played in Baltimore against the Ravens, his rookie year. I think his quarterback rating was like minus. That's how bad it was. It was one of like the worst performances you've ever seen by a quarterback ever. And he had several stinkers. But you know what? He got the experience. And who cares about his mechanics? Really? Like, who cares? As long as you're getting the ball to the receiver. I mean, you know, you're not a coach. You know, it's not like a quarterback school. It should be about more than anything else. Is he getting the job done? That roster was not very good this year or last year. You had a first-year coach. It was a rebuilding season for them. Look, if Zach Wilson comes back this year and plays poorly again, then we can have that type of conversation in January at the end of the year. And all of these character flaws that you want to paint on this guy, which I don't think have one reflection and one indication at all as to how he's going to map out as a quarterback. And I don't think if you're a fan, you should concern yourself. Like, do you really? I couldn't even tell you who the Jet captains are. Couldn't even tell you because most fans don't care. And those are awards that the players vote on in that locker room. So if they got no problem and if they voted him a captain, why should any of the fans? If he was a real, you know, if he was a real piece of garbage, they're not going to vote him a captain. And I don't think they're voting him a captain because he gave him free airline tickets. 800-919-3776. That is the telephone number. We'll go around the NFL coming up at 9 o'clock and look at all the Week 3 matchups. Dan Grasso Show till 10 right here on 98.7 ESPN.
You're listening to the best of ESPN New York Tonight.
If I could take a moment, you know, we were talking during the break, and sometimes, you know, like we have fun on this show and, you know, we joke around and we have laughs and all these other things and, you know, generally it's sports related, but, you know, sports is fun. But sometimes, like, serious matters come up. And I think that they're worth just throwing out there and sharing with everybody because, you know, these things can help save lives. We were talking during the break, myself, Jacob, and Tom. And I realized that I'm not alone in regards to one thing in particular. And I'm not ashamed to admit it because now I've realized that somebody else shares this same affliction that I do. I've never had Dippin' Dots. Like, we're watching the Yankee game, and they're showing people at the ballpark, and they're sitting there eating, like, the Dippin' Dots ice cream thing. And I said, I never had Dippin' Dots. And Jacob says, you know what? I never had Dippin' Dots. And I'm not ashamed to admit it. I was like, you know what? There's no shame either. So I'm putting it out there. I've never had Dippin' Dots. Now, Tom Bauer has had Dippin' Dots. So it's basically just ice cream, right? Little ice cream, but they're in the shape of little balls, right?
Pretty much. That's exactly what it is.
Is it a life-changing experience?
Absolutely not. Not life-changing at all.
Now, if you had your druthers, like if you could only have one, like I want ice cream or I want Dippin' Dots, like what's the choice?
Dippin' Dots all the way. No,
really?
Not Dippin' Dots. I'm sorry. Ice cream all the way. Like I kind of like that classic chocolate vanilla swirl. That's my go-to.
Swirl. Likes the swirl. I could see that. So then what's the cachet then of the Dippin' Dots? It's not as messy?
I guess. Like, I mean, the way it's formed, I don't know. Like, I haven't had it where it's, like, melted before, so I guess it is less messy. I guess that's the thing. I mean, I don't know what the huge big deal is. It just tastes like regular ice cream to me.
Jacob, how close have you come to having Dippin' Dots?
Honestly, nowhere close. I have, like, I've probably been to, like, Yankee Stadium, even City Field, Shea Stadium back when it was open. I've never had the urge to be like, yeah, I want Dippin' Dots. Not with my parents, nothing like that. Like, it was either McDonald's, you know, Wendy's. Let's go get some ice cream. Like, I'll go to Mr. Softy. We even talked about it.
I don't like Mr. Softy.
Oh, jeez.
No.
Oh, my God.
Dude, I don't like soft. I'm not like a soft serve guy. I'm not.
Okay, so.
And I know that that's a drop, by the way, that's going to be saved, and it's going to be brought back a million times on this show moving forward.
Oh, you better will.
I'm on it.
Yeah. He's on it already. No, but and I've never been in a situation either myself where I've like, oh, let's I want to try Dippin' Dots. Never. And just like you, ballparks, whether you're down the shore at the board, anywhere. Like, I've just never said, oh, I'm in the mood for that. I don't know if that day is ever going to come, to be honest with you.
I mean, in just in that instant, you say you don't like soft serve. Well, Garrett Cole just offered up something soft.
Really? Is that a game tying 3-run, Jack?
It's game time.
Look at that. Garrett Cole. I'll tell you guys. I mean, seriously. Like, I know the Dippin' Dots is an important conversation, right? And like I said, I'm glad that we got it out there because we're saving lives with this. Because there's other people that maybe feel embarrassed or ashamed that they've never had Dippin' Dots. So you can join our fraternity. But let's call a spade here. This home run thing is a problem with Garrett Cole. He can't keep the damn ball in the ballpark. And oh, by the way, the playoffs start in 2 weeks. In 2 freaking weeks. And you're paying this guy $324 million, and he couldn't keep me in the yard. I mean, my gosh. And he had a 3-run lead. Can't even get through the 6th inning. He's at 100 pitches. I bet you Boone comes and gets him. So you're basically paying all this money for a 6-inning pitcher that's going to give up 4 runs and let 2 leave the yard, which basically landed on the subway tracks. Yankees got some issues when it comes to the starting pitching. I mean, my gosh.
This is the Dan Grosser Show on 98.7 ESPN.